Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. Today is Tuesday, May the 6th, our call of 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everyone. We are honored that you're with us today to bring forward on another level the understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools that we've developed from that understanding. It's a very appreciated privilege to have you partake in the show. And for those who perhaps didn't hear yesterday's show, you might want to go back and give it a listen. It was absolutely awesome. And we thank Suzanne Tucker and Julie and Dr. Tim for their input. It was just, I think, an amazing show for a new Monday that we're going to create, and it's going to be parent-teacher talk Mondays. So we're going to be having Suzanne on the show every week. You know, we've got Aramaic Fridays, and now we've got parent-teacher talk Mondays. And the as I ruminate on what happened on the show yesterday, there's one part that I think hit the emotional nerve of everyone, and I've been kind of thinking about what that means in the context of the work. If you didn't happen to be on the show yesterday, Suzanne shared a thing that happened in one of her classes, a parenting class, and there was a woman whose family tradition was that when the kids are going to get hit, their own switch, cut it off the tree or whatever, and bring it in to the parents. It's like, you know, an extension of the torture to be hit with it or whipped with it or whatever you want to call it. And she shared that a woman stopped hitting her child when her child went out to get a switch and couldn't reach any, couldn't get one, and so brought some rocks back in with him, gathered rocks and gave them to his mother and said, "I couldn't find a switch here. Just throw these at me." And when you look at, you know, the parents' reality, the parents' perspective, I hit my child to try to get them to behave. There's a whole rationale. And there's actually one person on Suzanne's blog that said hitting was all, children was all right as long as you did it properly and right, which is one of the biggest oxymorons I've ever seen. But when you listen to that story, to me, what I take away from it is what the child learned from being hit was, my mother wants to hurt me. I can't find a switch, so I'll bring in rocks. And, you know, we ask the question often on this show, have you ever held a newborn child? And everybody who we ask to describe the essence of the newborn uses some word based in love. It's tenderness, it's sweetness, it's wholesomeness, it's purity, it's love. And that's where we all start out. And then we lose our birthright, and my offering is our birthright is to experience ourselves continuously as love and to experience everyone around us as love. Excuse me, you can't lovingly hit the child. Behavior modification, if your child has been separated from the experience of love and now is an unruly child, I'd offer you might want to start to look at your part in the process. And you will never bring that child back to its eternal essence, love, by hitting. Just as when you were hit, you did not come back to your essence, love. I work with so many people, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, and they'll even say things like, well, I got my share of the switch and it never hurt me. But yeah, I noticed that you live in dejection. Jamie just tells me that my phone is garbled. I apologize. I'm not sure what to do or what to say about that. We'll try moving around and see if we get a different signal. Give us just one moment here. My apology. And Jeannie, let's see if that's any better. We get any better signal here? Life on the road, what can I say? Is that any better? Well, my apology, I don't know what to do about it.
Well, Michael?
Yes, sir.
While it's not the best signal, I was able to hear every word, so...
Okay.
I don't know if Jeannie had some actual cutting out where she couldn't hear you, but I was able to hear.
Okay. Well, then we'll just continue. And we'll ask the cell phone gods to strengthen our signal a little bit. So where I was going with that is that it's our birthright to experience ourselves and everyone around us as love. And the moment someone raises their hand to that child, that active state of love, generally speaking, is shattered. 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, I work with people who wonder why they're in so much pain, why they're in turmoil, why they're in trauma, why is their thinking negative, why are they in degrading thoughts about themselves, why do they speak words of hostility and fear toward themselves and others. And I'd offer that it all started when the parent forced the child to give up its birthright, experiencing that parent as the active presence of love. And my offering is that our obligation as parents is to do the work required to bring ourselves back to that active presence of love, to reclaim our birthright. The birthright's been gone for so long on the planet. It's time to do the work to reclaim our birthright, to re-experience ourselves as this awesome active presence of love and do whatever it takes to forgive everything else. Forgiveness, as we've talked about virtually every day, is not about letting somebody else off the hook because you're feeling some sort of pain or turmoil. Forgiveness is how you go in and remove your pain and turmoil. It's how you are restored to your birthright. If it's been 1,000 generations since a newborn in your family system experienced its birthright, was supported in experiencing itself as love by a parent who experienced themselves as love, by siblings who experienced themselves as love, by neighbors who experienced themselves as love. If it's been 1,000 generations, there's some significant work to do. And I'm just so delighted that Suzanne is opening the pathway to a whole community in St. Louis, and we're encouraging her to take her her parents' workshop, her conscious parenting workshop online, so that people who aren't locally available can do that. And she'll be with us every Monday doing parent-teacher talk Mondays. So much appreciation, and we are here to be the space and to hold the space as each one of us returns to and claims our birthright. And what an awesome day it will be on the earth when each person understands how to do that. There was a man 2,000 years ago who most people think of as a religious teacher, which he was not. He said, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. He didn't say, I come to bring you suffering and pain. I come to show you how to reclaim your birthright. Here's how to do it. Follow me, for I am the way, the truth, and the life, which is an Aramaic idiom, not for a man or an ego, but rather for a body of work. A man and his work were one. Here's how you do it. Here's how you reclaim your birthright. We're here to understand the first century Aramaic meaning of his words, because he's the only place on the planet that you'll find the actual specific, intricate way of forgiving, of removing from your mind what never belonged. The rest of the world has made it into an act of pardoning, an act of letting other people off the hook because of what's inside of you, as opposed to how to go inside of you and literally remove your capacity to be in pain. If you had a tool to remove your capacity to be in pain, would you use it long enough and often enough to free yourself from pain? Not an easy project, not going to happen overnight. As I say, if it's been 1,000 generations since a birthright of a newborn was truly honored, then there's 1,000 generations of insanity to be removed. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some work. There is no more rewarding work on the planet. So that's what we're here to do. Dr. Tim, how do you meet today, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
And you were with us today?
Well, I was likewise quite moved by the show yesterday and the very poignant story of the child who thinks their job is to bring the parent something with which to inflict pain on the child. And so I'm very grateful for the gift of tools like breathing and tapping and worksheets to dismantle that upset and restore me to that place of love that is so much different than just wishing it away or getting angry at someone else. So I'm
several worksheets in that one for me.
Yeah, I'm just very grateful for that. And I had the pleasure of listening to some more of the Guy Finley's talks, and there was a quote at the end of one of his talks I wanted to share. He's talking about how, you know, throughout all of this talk about how it's an inside job, and when these outside events happen, all they're doing is stirring up stuff inside of us that helps reveal to us what is in us that needs to be transcended, that needs to be integrated, that needs to be seen with the light of awareness so that it gets burned off or integrated. And so rather than listening to what somebody else says, rather than following a guru, rather than getting in line lockstep with the boss or somebody who knows, he says, here are the seven words to free yourself from fear. And those seven words are, I'm going to find out for myself. Not long after he offers that, and he's been talking throughout the talk about the need to understand at different levels, deeper and deeper, the truth that I'm creating my upset. And when an outside event happens and I resist the outside event, my resistance is going to block me from learning the lesson that this event has for me. And one of the biggest lessons it has for me is to reveal to me that I had upset stored in me. And then the final quote of that hour-long talk is, God hasn't just given you a teacher. She has put you in a universe in which your relationship with the living teaching is never absent from you if you will just be present to it.
powerful.
And his that whole lecture is about how to turn whatever happens to me, around me, with me, is how to turn that into a lesson about what I need to learn and integrate to move forward. And I think that's what happens every time I do a worksheet process. I think the worksheet is one of the most concise and effective tools for helping me transform my upset or resistance to whatever's happened around me into new knowledge about negative energies I was carrying inside of me and releasing them. So that's my offering for today.
Cool. Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you find a tool that takes you into your own personal desert. And, you know, to me, that's what the forgiveness process does. And that's why when we do a Why Is This Happening To Me Again workshop, we invite people to make a commitment to do 5 worksheets a day for 40 days, because 40 days in the desert, 40 days learning about things in your unconscious mind will change your life forever. And it's certainly a process, and it takes work. So, Jean, do we have anything happening in the chat room, or do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Our calling number, of course, is 646-4169. If you're on one of those stations that we don't have access to in our control panel, you can call that number. You'll be listening to the show. And if you have a question, all you have to do is hit 1. And that will put you in the phone queue. So do we have anybody, Jean?
Well, the chat room is just kind of quiet, but we do have a hand up. We have 3 hands up, actually, in the switchboard. So let's go to our first caller. It's area code 765. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael, Jeannie, Dr. Tim.
Hey there, young lady.
Hey. I was just finally allowing myself to release and process. I couldn't hold it back anymore. Yesterday, I wanted to call you and ask a question and at the same time thank you that you had suggested my daughter's nearly 15 and not warming up to the worksheet process or even wanting to listen to any part of it. So I did, in fact, do what you had requested or suggested, is that I read the commitment to her. And equally, I took stills of it in my phone, and I would text the commitment to herself, being type 1 diabetic, and my commitment to her, so she would have it available if she chose. And without too much story, Michael, yesterday I would have saying, you know, I really wanted to thank you because I had my child back. She was so happy and just healthier. And there's issues now that she's back with her dad. I had her for a week, and she was very sick. And my question was, surrounding the scenario of everything we went through and endured this week with her help, is if it was possible that she could feel the worksheet process through my work and through the commitment, if she could have her own health crises as though she were doing the worksheet process herself. Does that make
Absolutely.
Sense?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
When you open the space, when you open the energy window and you process in you what is similar in her, it's going to tend to open. And when someone is dealing with diabetes, the tendency is for there, and as I listen to your voice, I detect a note of grief open in your voice. And the issue that tends to lock the pancreas up, so one goes into the diabetic condition, is that of unresolved grief. And so I would support you in continuing to read that to her picture or to her personally every time you get a chance, and to just keep holding that space. And it may not be pretty when her grief opens. It may not be pretty when your grief opens and you get to unload that from the pancreas. But when it unloads, the pancreas can reorganize itself.
I think I may have her father receptive to it, and I don't know how with I don't know, Michael, so much if it is my own denial or if it is these distractions, if you will. I am a parent, and I'm not figuring it out, okay? I'll be the first one to tell you, no, I'm not figuring it out. And I love you, and I'm so grateful because I wouldn't stand a chance without this
Breathe.
Work.
Breathe.
I need to.
Here's my next assignment.
I need to get my daughter to Heartland, and I think I have her and her father receptive to it. She's interested suddenly in cooking. I think it's her subconscious desire to understand and come to terms with her food issues, if you will. And I would love if there's some arrangement we could make for her to meet Ari and work with Ari and get her there. I don't know how else. I don't know what else to do at this point, Michael.
Well, you can go to the website, and you can see what our schedule is, and you can also type in work support, and you can see what a work support program is. So check that out. In the meantime, here's your assignment. Get a picture of your former husband and start reading the commitment to him every day, to his picture.
And do what now? I'm sorry?
The exact same assignment that you were given with your daughter?
Yes.
Do it with your former.
I have.
Cool.
Yeah.
And keep moving through that grief.
Yes, and that's where I said we are communicating and communicate this to him. I've just told him that I think I have a solution, and I'd like to take her there just to support her in her interest in culinary arts and to understand vegetarian and the microbiotic diet. And I thought it would be good for her, and he's rather agreed. So if we could just make the financial arrangements and among other things, Michael. Right, thank you. But if this helps parents at all, my kid is going to be 15, and I wish I could have instilled any part of this in her when she was smaller. And but chicken and cinnamon, I think it's working. I pray it is.
We support you.
To the cinnamon extract and things like that. So those are all huge signs, and I can't thank you enough.
We support you restoring your daughter to her birthright, to experience her mother and her father and herself as the active presence of love.
So just continue with the vicarious work then, yes?
Carry on. That's it.
Thank you for my soul together.
All right, blessings. Thank you for your call. All right, appreciate you. Blessings for that. Gina, you got another caller.
I do, and it's area code 661. You're on the air.
Hello.
661, welcome to the show. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Am I on?
You are.
Oh, perfect. Well, my name's David, and I'm calling from the outskirts of London in the UK.
Awesome. Welcome to the show. How can we support you?
Well, I have an older brother who is severely autistic. He's about 20 years old, and he still lives at home with me and my mom. And he's been really getting into your show lately, and he seems like he's been a lot happier. He hasn't had as many anger fits as he usually does. He just seems like a happier person, and he said something to me that just absolutely blew my mind, and I think this might be from your show. I mean, he's just become such a positive person and just so happy, and I mean, I'd like to tell you what he told me that just absolutely made me smile ear to ear because it was just so good to hear.
Share it with us. I'm on the edge of my seat.
All right. Well, what he told me is I came downstairs and, you know, he was just smiling. And I said, you know, what are you smiling about? And he said to me, he said, if you suck a nigger dick, does it taste like a watermelon?
Okay. We'll just cut this conversation off.
That's,
thank you.
Yeah, I deleted him off. Apologies, audience.
Yeah. I don't know where people's brains are, but anyway. All right. So we've got another caller.
Well, actually, the other caller has dropped off, so if someone presses 1, you're next in line without waiting. 646-200-4169. We had a hand just go up, area code 541. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sounds
yes.
like Miss Julie from Ashland, Oregon. Yeah.
Yes, I'm still living in Ashland, Oregon.
Hey there, young lady.
Well,
how are you?
Hi there. Thanks for you and Jeannie and all that you're doing. And I know you're on the West Coast here, and I wish that I had put together a visit here for you to share your goodness in Ashland again. However, I haven't put that together this time. That's all right. And I'd like to mention that I called last week about having hit a deer while driving. The deer was injured but didn't die right there in front of me. It was a large deer, and I'm fine. I didn't get hurt. My car really has minimal damage. Considering, so all of that aside, I decided to drive back yesterday and see if I could find the spot where I had hit the deer and had seen it go off and lay down next to a tree. And I just want to mention how I became acutely aware of how hard it was for me to stay conscious. It was hard to find the spot. It was hard to, it was at the same time of day, so it was getting a little towards that darker time after sunset where everything looks the same. And my car is the color of a deer. The road's the color of my car. The deer seems like it's all one. It's really tough to see the car. And so,
I don't know what the scratching sound is. There's a scratching sound that's every yard in your room.
Pardon me, is it not coming in good?
You are now, but there was some kind of a scratching sound that was overriding your voice. We couldn't hear you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Thanks for mentioning that. I've been unconscious. About to talk about how unconscious I am. I put it in my pocket, and that's what happened. Put my phone in my pocket. So anyway, I'll try to get to this. So I was looking for the spot where I had hit the deer, and I had to become aware of other deer because it was that time of evening when the deer were out by the side of the road and they could cross again. And this was up on a mountain road, not just in town here in Ashland, where we actually have a lot of deer here too. So I just, my mind kept getting distracted. I mean, I was so easily triggered into some other thought, some other where in my mind. And then there'd be a deer by the side of the road. And I'd have to suddenly saw it instead of looking ahead and being a really conscious driver. And so I am just noticing how fragmented I have become and conditioned in this modern world to be easily sidetracked. And I would say that I carried that forward from another time probably, but it's just so reinforced. And then this morning, a person was on the radio about a book about being a compassionate hunter and how conscious you have to be to hunt and kill to eat, and if you're going to eat meat. And he was really grounded and slow talking. It wasn't a hyper interview, you know. And he just kept coming up with gratitude and love for animals and life. I mean, that was just so in his heart. And it's just a worksheet, I guess, I'm going to do on how removed I've become from saying thank you to life. And I know that feelings come up of shame, you know, for having hurt a deer, shame for eating factory processed meats. You know, I'm aware of it. If I go with it, it's guilt and shame instead of, I don't know, how do I reconcile that, you know? So I have to find out with the worksheet process, and I guess I'm just bringing it forth to our family, our spiritual family here, and just to change the subject.
Yeah, so it sounds like the opportunity to forgive shame and guilt, and that those are the things that keep your mind in a distracted state, and as you reach inside yourself and remove those things, consciously, purposely remove those things, then you'll be free of their distractions. Otherwise, you know, shame and guilt are, you know, two of the biggies in our culture that keep people in that unconscious state. So we thank you for being willing to move forward and be one who opens the space to move through those energies on another level. And a mind shifter, if you've got a pen handy, I think the mind shifter that might be useful.
Well, go ahead, and I'll re-listen. I can't write now, but that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. So the mind shift I suggest is it's safe and healing for me to be fully present and conscious to every moment of my life.
Oh, yeah.
For those who aren't familiar with the mind shifter process, that's a tool that we use. And what you do, if that one appeals to you, you take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle of the page. On the left-hand side of the page, you'd write that mind shifter. And on the right-hand side of the page, write everything that comes up in your mind in response to it. And when you run out of things to write, write the mind shifter again. You might write it a time or two or three or four until your mind starts to dump, and just dump everything in your mind in regard to those ideas. And as you spend at least an hour, preferably 2 hours with that, you'll tend to touch into some deeper hidden things in the mind that perhaps it's time to forgive. So that's another tool that we teach the mind shifter.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you for your call. We appreciate you and lots of love and blessings.
All right. Same to you. Love you. Bye-bye.
646-200-4169 is our calling number. If you're on one of those stations we don't have access to in our control panel, if you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you hit one, that'll put you in queue. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
We do have a Skype caller. Skype caller, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome. Who are we talking to?
My name is Ash.
Hi, Ash. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Charlotte, Wyoming.
Oh, cool. Welcome to the show. How can we support you?
Well, I'm aware that you guys got some prank calls earlier, and I just wanted to warn you that there's a website called 4chan.org, and they posted your number and everything. I've been a long-time listener, and they're going to try to do some more prank calls. So if you get any more Skype callers, I wouldn't pay attention to those, because they're just going to try to disrupt your show.
Thank you for letting us know. We appreciate it very much. We must be having an impact in the world if somebody's trying to interfere with the process. And that's okay.
Fuck niggers.
So, Dean, anything happening in the chat room? Anybody else with a hand up?
No. It's real quiet in the chat room. There's several people out there listening, but no questions, and nobody else has their hand up.
So you'll be first in line. If you push one, and we're here to answer your questions. We're here to support you. Our work is the work of first century Aramaic forgiveness, and the word forgive in the first century didn't mean I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. It's the tool. It's the technology with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. And so we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and there's a bullseye right in the middle of the page. If you click the bullseye, that bullseye will take you into a whole series of links on the how-to of first century Aramaic forgiveness. It works with how the mind actually operates, and because most of us live in a backward world. Most of us live in a world where we believe that somebody else is responsible for what's going on inside of us. You notice that the language of the world is, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you made me happy. And I'm putting the responsibility for what my body-mind unit is producing onto something outside of me. And when I do that, I cut myself off from what's happening inside of me, and then I get stuck because this body-mind unit, its mind is what we call a replicant mind. All it can do is replicate whatever's in it, and if what's in it is hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, drama, trauma of any kind, then that's what's going to play out. And so become aware that if you choose to learn the technology, it's going to seem backward. At first, when you start to use it, it's going to seem backward. You know, for those who may be listening with the idea of making a prank call, your mind is working backward, and you're not serving yourself and you're not serving life to play that game. And it's okay if that's what you choose to do, but we invite you instead to recognize who you are and that you could be using your intelligence and your energy to make a contribution in a suffering world, in a world where there is so much pain and so much insanity that it's almost incalculable. So what if you actually tapped into who you really are? What if you actually tapped into what you're really here for, and you used your time, your intelligence, your money, your energy to do something constructive in the world? You know, I've never understood the mind that sits around, and I can't fathom how many hours it must take to create a virus for computers just to trip up and cause other people all kinds of cost, other people all kinds of time to try to bring their computers back into full function. It's like, what a waste of life when there are so many constructive things that need to be done in the world. You know, if you're over there in London, get on a plane and go to Africa. Hold some starving children. Take some food with you. Do something useful with your life. There are so many places where there is need in the world. So I invite you to consider and to think about that. And to do that, you might have to do some forgiveness. And you can go to our website, free. There are hundreds of hours of information on the forgiveness process, and you're welcome to go there and do it. Tim, is that your voice I hear?
No, it was me. I was just going to say we do have another caller. It is area code 602. You're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Steve, welcome. Give us a name.
Oh, hi, Dr. Rice. My name is Steve. I'm quickly becoming a big fan of your work. I spoke with you, this is probably a couple of months ago, and I do intuitive work myself, and for a long time, I believed that in this whole concept of forgiveness at a distance, which after speaking with you, I've come to realize that that's actually a pretty arrogant way of just judging somebody in disguise. And I kind of had an epiphany with all this today, and honestly, I don't know if I have a specific question for you. I think I just wanted to call and say thank you.
Thank you for saying thank you, and maybe you'd share your opinion with us. How did that unfold?
Well, okay, I'm getting married. I've been divorced twice. Each of those, you know, divorces was a result of my inability to forgive, primarily. You know, relationships with my dad and anybody I perceive as hurting me. I mean, I realize now that I was doing all that to myself. But basically, I didn't want to make the same mistakes that I made in the first two. And so I started listening to your show and talking with my fiance. She's a big fan of yours as well. And so for a long time, I thought I had a handle on forgiveness. I actually used to host a radio show, and I taught what I thought was a concept of forgiveness. And I'm just realizing today that, you know, I've been basically doing just the opposite, that I've been, you know, holding people at a distance, that I've been running away as opposed to loving these people. And I finally realized this morning that to truly forgive somebody, you have to love them. And so, you know, after your show is over, I'm going to go get a three-ring binder and begin doing the work that I need to do this, because I'm realizing now that everything that I have created in my life up to this point has been the result of a self-hatred that has set me up for, you know, disappointment. And, you know, I wanted to call and thank you and, you know, for the work that you've done, because without it, I don't believe I would be in this space right now ready to make a major shift in the way that I see the world. So I hope that makes sense. I probably sound like I'm rambling, but
no, you're making perfect sense. You're right on track. A couple of just minor refinements, and that is
sure. That
we're going to suggest that you never forgive one person in your life, and you never forgive yourself. If you've discovered that you have self-hatred, then you would apply forgiveness to the self-hatred to remove it from your structure. Then, instead of loving people, you will stand in your original being as the space of love in relationship to people. If you have fear, then you apply forgiveness to your fear to remove the fear. Grief, rage, sadness, hatred, whatever, it's that needs to be forgiven. The world has taught us a backward concept that, you know, I'm experiencing fear, therefore I'll forgive you for frightening me, where what we're offering is, if you choose to pardon them because they did something inappropriate that brought up fear for you, great, pardon them, but call it what it is. Letting them off the hook is pardoning. And then apply forgiveness to the fear inside of you to remove the fear. And when you dissolve, when you discard those things, the only thing that's left is who you are, and that's that awesome active presence of love. And you won't be loving people, but you will be love in your relationship with people. And that creates a whole different world.
Well, let me ask you a question then. What does that look like when you are applying forgiveness to self-hatred or applying forgiveness to fear? I mean, what you're saying makes perfect sense to me. I'm not exactly sure how I would do that.
Well, in essence... In essence, if you realize that the output of your mind is that of self-hatred, then
okay. Your
worksheet might have your own name as number one, and then I realize I have self-hatred would be number 1B. Number 1C, how do I feel about that hatred? Well, I don't like it, and I think I'm helpless over it. There's nothing I can do. So that would be number 1D. That would be the thought, I'm helpless over self-hatred. And then the punishment thought might be, you know, I want to, you know, any myriad of any kind of punishment one might do. Then just kind of to accelerate the process, we go down to number 3, and you'd look at, in the situation where you have self-hatred, where you realize there's hatred of self there, what's the goal that you have for yourself in that situation? And the goal might be to be self-accepting. So number 3, you'd put self-acceptance. Number 4, I want to activate the presence of love in me. I'm gonna tap into whatever it is that takes me back to my newborn energy, You know, I always use the image of my daughter as I was catching her when she was being born. She opened her eyes, totally, completely focused in my eyes, and grinned at me and sent me into a totally different universe. So I use that as what takes me into number four, to really tapping into that love. And then I'm going to bring the answer from number three, self-acceptance, down to number five, and this is where it gets tricky. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag, and it means to cancel. Of course, it's a reasonable goal for me to have self-acceptance. But when my goal for self-acceptance resonates the file in my mind on self where there's hatred, then that brings forward or resonates self-hatred in me. When I cancel the goal for self-acceptance, I collapse the projection of that self-hatred, and I open a pathway into the hidden part of my mind where that self-hatred exists. I get to bring that forward in my mind directly in the presence of that love that I've stimulated in me. And when those two things meet, the self-hatred begins to dissolve.
Wow.
So that would be a short form of approaching the forgiveness process.
Okay.
If I have anger itself, you know, I'm number 1A, would again, might be my own name. I'm angry at myself because I failed at doing thus and so. And number 1C might be I feel helpless in that regard. And number 1D might be there seems to be nothing I can do about it. Jump down to the goal. What's the goal when I've got anger itself? My goal is to be nurturing myself, taking care of myself. And now I cancel my need for that. Once again, that opens the file in my mind on anger directly. And when my anger is directly exposed to love, it begins to dissolve. So that would be a couple of examples of how you'd use it.
Okay.
So all right. My physiology is capable of producing hate, fear, guilt, grief, anger, rage, sadness, pain, turmoil. What I want to do is I want to get directly to the root of that. And the way to get to the root of it is to see what my goal is and cancel that goal. Now, you know, the goal to be self-accepting is a wonderful, loving goal. Many people would say, well, why would I cancel my need for that? That doesn't make any sense. Well, because when I load the goal to be self-accepting, it accesses my file where there's self-hatred, and so what ends up coming up is self-hatred.
Oh, I understand. So basically the belief in self-acceptance creates the self-hatred.
Well, it doesn't create it. It accesses it. If it's already there, it accesses it. And this is the first century tool that Yeshua gave for forgiving it, for accessing it and removing the self-hatred. So the goal for self-acceptance doesn't create the self-hatred. Let's go back to, you know, the story we started the show out with. This little kid is sent out to get a switch. He can't get a switch. And he comes back in with rocks and says, Mom, throw these rocks at me. And obviously a kid who would do that has got something like perhaps self-hatred. He's been taught that he isn't worthy of love and he's worthy of being punished and having rocks thrown at him. And so from a three-year-old or a five-year-old, there's self-hatred. 50 years later, that is so painful that I can't allow it to come up directly. So that hatred comes up and I look at somebody else and say, yeah, that SOB boy, I'm going to get them. And then when I realize that I'm pointing my hatred at that person that I call the SOB or maybe my spouse, then I realize the driver that causes my mind to use that unconscious data is my goal for them. So when I wanted my spouse to be nurturing with me, like I'm not nurturing with myself, when I wanted my spouse to be nurturing with me, and she wouldn't, then that goal for her to nurture me resonates that hatred file. But I use that file to to build my brain's image of her, and I think she's the one with the problem. That's the way the world sees it. When you cancel the goal for her to be nurturing of you, that collapses the projection of that content into your brain's image of her and gives you direct access to that content. When you have direct access to content that is unloving, when that content is exposed to love, the content dissolves automatically, instantly. Whatever you're willing to have exposed dissolves. And I think the reason for that is because anything that's not in harmony with the Creator's mind, which is love, when exposed to the Creator's mind through us, has to start to fall apart. It just begins to dissolve.
And is this what you mean about the dangers of having goals for others? I mean that's where a lot of this comes from, is from having beliefs about the way other people should be, which is another way of saying we have goals for these people. And so you're
not
talking
quite
about dissolving the goals.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the problem is not the goal. You would never hear me say it's a danger to have goals for others. You know, if I'm in a relationship with you and there's something that, you know, we've agreed we're going to do, it's reasonable for me to have a goal for you. That's a great thing.
Okay.
It's wonderful for me to have a goal for you. But if I load the goal in my mind and what it accesses is hostility toward you, why didn't you do that yesterday? I'm really peeved at you. That goal is the key way into my hostility and the dissolution, the forgiveness of it. So the goal isn't the problem. We have to have goals for others. We live in an interdependent world. We can't do this whole game on our own. It's reasonable to have goals for people you have relationships with. But if you notice that loading a goal in your mind accesses some form of hostility or fear, that's where you want to forgive. And you forgive by canceling that goal. Now, again, it might be a wonderful goal. Gee, you know, I want you to be loving and nurturing with me. That's a reasonable goal. Everybody deserves to have that goal with everybody in their lives. But if I load reasonable and nurturing with me into my mind, and that brings up rage, the problem isn't the reasonable and nurturing goal I have for you. The goal is the key way into the problem that's inside of me. And when I cancel the goal, that's how I get a door to open to that part directly that I need to heal. And then when I get to the bottom of the worksheet, I might reestablish the goal to be, you know, reasonable and nurturing with me. It's a perfectly fine goal. The thing is, what does the goal resonate in me, and what do I need to clean up? And when you cancel the goal, it collapses the idea that my turmoil is about you, and I get direct access to my turmoil. Direct access to my turmoil with the active presence of love begins to dissolve my turmoil. That's forgiveness in Aramaic.
Nothing
to do with letting you off the hook. That's the process of forgiveness.
Gotcha. Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, then the goal is if you find rage or hatred or something going on with that, then that, like you said, the keyway, the window into what you need to forgive. Am I making sense?
Exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Okay, good.
And when you cancel the goal,
I just want to make sure I got it.
That's what opens a pathway to that dissociated or hidden part of the mind that needs to be healed. So forgiveness is always the internal process of removing what never belonged in my physiology. And if I live in a world where I've been taught to blame everybody else, well, I'm angry because you said this, I'm sad because you didn't do that, then I dissociate from my anger and my sadness. The way I get back into direct relationship with and clean up my anger and my sadness is to locate the specific goal I have that resonates that, cancel that goal, open the doorway to that part of my mind, I bring it forward to the exposure to love, and it dissolves, and now I'm free of it. That's forgiveness.
And that moves across like all the fear emotions like jealousy and so on.
Everything.
Okay.
The deepest hatred, the deepest insanity, the deepest grief, pain, turmoil, trauma you can imagine, that's precisely how to forgive it.
Wonderful.
All right. Thank you for asking the question so we get a chance to clarify it. That's awesome.
Well, I really appreciate your work, and I hope to talk to you again.
All right. Blessings. We hope you will. Take care. Let us know how it unfolds. And we hold the space. If you haven't looked at the commitment yet on the website, download the commitment and start to use it within the context of your relationship. And, in fact, many people use that commitment as their wedding vows or some adaptation of it. You might take a look at that.
You know, Dr. Rice, I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I spent 35 years crafting those words to make it a set of tools for how to move forward and create awesome relationships. So take it and see if it fits.
I will. Thank you, Dr. Rice.
All right, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, we're down to about 3 minutes, and so not really time for another call. We appreciate it.
But let's at least say hello to Peter because he's been holding for a while. So, Peter, you're on the air.
Well, hello there.
Well, hey, young man. How was your trip to India?
It was great. Wonderful.
Cool. What's exciting in your world?
This show.
All right. It is exciting.
It is very exciting. I've been listening the day after because it never fits in the evening time for me. But the day after, I listened to it. So it's been phenomenal the last month, really. There's just so much going on, happening, and happening on my end as well. So it's just a beautiful, beautiful process.
Very cool. Well, maybe if you have a chance, seeing as I'm so late, and I apologize for not getting you in earlier, but maybe if you have a chance tomorrow, we could start the show out, you know, once we do our introduction and say hello to Dr. Tim. We could have a conversation and see what's happening and see if there's any support you can be for us or we can be for you.
I'll do my best.
All right, sir. We appreciate you. Lots of love and blessings.
Same to you.
For those who don't know Peter's in Sweden. He's our Swedish connection, and we appreciate him a lot. In the meantime, if you're in the tri-state area in Washington State, we're going to be in Richlands, Washington today, doing the workshop Healing Through Relationships. And we'll be doing free workshops through Friday. Schedules on our website, www.whyagain.org. You're welcome to tap in. And we'll be delighted if you happen to be in Portland, Oregon. We've been looking for a venue to set something up there next week. Even if it's a small happening, we'd love to do it. So give us a call and let us know. We appreciate you. Give the world the most awesome gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.